What's up, everyone? Welcome, welcome. This is another episode of the Government Coins Podcast. I am so happy to be here with you today because we are going to go through the government contracting process from start to finish. And we have an amazing guest here today who has a company and has been teaching and doing government contracting for a number of years. So we are so excited to have Tan Wilson from Intellect here with us. Hi, Tan. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me here today.
Of course. I'm super excited about this. As soon as I got the introduction for you, I said, oh, this will be perfect to have her on the podcast. So I'm happy we actually took that time to really schedule it out.
I'm so glad we were able to connect. I know the last quarter of the year is just crazy, just from a personal perspective. But mm-hmm. as far as the government's perspective, it's a much simpler time of year from the government. So it's a very, very good time.
Yes. And I'm okay. So before we go too deep into it, can you give us an introduction or just not an introduction? Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you stumbled into the space of government contracting? Because it's one of the best kept secrets.
It kind of is. And it's like really weird because I don't think anybody gets up in the morning or, you know, graduates from high school and be like, I want to be a government contractor. And I did, using your words, kind of stumble, you know, like into the field. So I'm a trained chemist by training. So I've got a chemistry degree and a political science degree. And so this was not ever, you know, like my future plans was to, you know, be in the government space. But my name is Tan Wilson. My company is called Intellect. And we do a number of different government contracting support services, from business development, capture is a very government term that we can kind of dive into a little bit, and I'll give you a better explanation of it, to proposals, contracts and compliance risks. We do pricing strategy and development. We also do strategic staffing and sourcing for the government contracts. But a lot of what I do and what I'm very fond of is executive coaching. So I do coaching with a lot of women business owners, other business development professionals in the field. And so I try to impart, you know, my knowledge to them and kind of, you know, help them along the way. And sometimes talk a couple of clients off the ledge sometimes, right? We all need someone or a mentor to kind of be there for us. So I'm kind of like my clients' people, right? Like
that support system.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Okay. And so starting out as a chemist, that is very interesting. So how was that process or how was that like transition aspect of it? When did you find out about government contracting and just say, this is it?
Yeah, exactly. So I think my degree really helps because chemists are very analytical. So to me, it's all about the process, right? So if you do this, and if you add this, and if you tweak this and change this, and you have a different chemical reaction. And so in government contracting, it's the same way, right? If you do this, if you change that, if you have a process, you'll get a different result. And so I actually got into government contracting through a government program using my chemistry and my background in science. And so I came down here. Actually, I'm not in DC anymore, but I came down to Northern Virginia, DC area to manage a HUD contract. And from there, it just kind of grew. It's like, I saw how the government worked. I saw the, you know, the interesting things that the government does. And I don't think that everybody out there realizes that the government really doesn't make or do things. Like, they hire people to do things for them, right? They hire the knowledge. You know, behind every, you know, program, there is a highly experienced and capable and qualified, you know, company. With their experts behind it. So the government buys a lot of their knowledge and a lot of their services. You know, we put rockets, you know, like, you know, up into, you know, like the stratosphere. And we also answer phones and mow the lawns and, you know, different things like that. So it's a pretty large, you know, set of services that the government buys.
I say absolutely. And I think that's one component of, you know, getting into the space and understanding, you know, how to do business with the government, realizing that it's this huge organization who really, they need assistance from the outside. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your company, because we also have a number of small business owners who are interested in, you know, getting into the space, but as they grow, they may need assistance with, you know, managing contracts and things of that nature. So would you mind telling us a little bit more about Intellect?
Yeah, so I like to say I'm not everyone's cup of tea, and there are times sometimes where you're just not ready for me. And so you really do need to have someone, when you speak to them, be very transparent with you. And you know, I'm known in the industry as someone who really doesn't hold back. I'm very transparent. I will, like, you know, my saying is that, you know, I rush to get to the no, right? Like, I think that's key in any business, is get to the no faster and sooner. That way you can kind of move on and do other things. And so I think, you know, the way that a lot of companies work with me and what my ideal client would be is someone who really is a little bit more knowledgeable in the government space, right? We don't work with emerging companies. We don't work with companies that are just new to the government space. There are so many free resources out there. I'm expensive. I'm not as expensive as maybe some of my other, you know, like counterparts in this industry. But when you're a small business, you don't have an infinite amount of, you know, budget and resources and money to really kind of hire. So, you know, just like any entrepreneur, you got to kind of learn. Learn as much as you can and get and take advantage of as many of the, you know, free resources that are out there. And the government itself spends a lot of money in educating companies on understanding the space and understanding how to work with the government. And there are procurement technical assistance centers, or PTACs, across the country that are run through a lot of the universities that are free for anybody who needs advice, needs counseling, needs support. And they do a lot of training and webinars. And I do a lot of those myself too, as my way to kind of give back to industry, where, you know, an hour free of a webinar or, you know, like, you know, hands-on support from someone who is working with an association that is already being paid by the government to educate you about the government, is probably money better well spent than, you know, my hourly rate, to kind of help you understand that.
Got it. Okay. So definitely we'll keep that in mind. Where do you usually teach many of these programs or courses?
So I do a lot of work through different associations. So the PTACs are everywhere. So they will have experts like myself come in and do hour sessions or half day sessions. And so you can kind of, you know, like I tell my son, use Google for good, right? So you can kind of Google those. I have spoken at different agency small business events. So every agency from the Department of Energy to HUD to even the DOD, they have annual conferences and events where they will bring all of their government experts and their small business liaisons and, you know, people who are actually working and interfacing with the small businesses to educate them on what is it that each agency buys? You know, like every agency buys something different. You know, how is the best way to get a contract? Because they all contract differently. And so kind of getting you to understand that. And then there's, you know, other associations that you can kind of pay for memberships. Like me, I love to be part of any organization that's free, right? You know, when you're a new business, free is king, free is great. But there are other associations like, you know, Women Impacting Public Policy, WIP. WIP has a partnership with American Express and the Small Business Administration where they will put on events across the country called the Challenge Her events. And those are free to attendees. And I, you know, I speak at those. I'm speaking next Wednesday in San Diego at a Challenge Her event. And so, you know, those events are really great too. You get to, you know, meet people like me and hear from other people and hear from other people from, you know, other industries and the government for that. And then other associations that are more technical. So there's never an end of resources that are out there. You just kind of have to be on the lookout for them.
Well, the event that's on Wednesday, next Wednesday, correct? Will that be virtual or can you attend it virtually? So I saw that one online as well.
If everybody wants to kind of connect with me afterwards or follow me on LinkedIn, I publish everything that's on there. If I don't publish in a while, that means I'm heads down on a proposal or a government deliverable. And if you don't hear me for a couple of weeks, I think you kind of need to send out the posse because it's not like me to not be online or share some information. But I believe the Challenge Tour is going to be in person. I think a lot of associations are moving to a hybrid event. But I guess I could say the one silver lining for the pandemic is that the government has learned better ways of being very transparent with industry and making it so that it doesn't matter where you live, right? You know, it's like everybody's kind of all in a level playing field where you don't have to be within a couple hundred miles of DC to really kind of know what's going on in DC because we had to be online. And so the government had to learn ways to work in more of a virtual environment. And now they're moving more to hybrid. And we are kind of going back to a little bit more of a standard, you know, in person. And I like the in-persons because, you know, even though the government's really big, it's still run by people.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
So we buy from who we like and who we trust and who we know. And so I don't think there's really any, you know, substitute for those organic in-person type of discussions and connections that we make with people. And so, you know, the hybrid does give people better options, but to me, hands down, in person, there's really no substitute for that, especially when it comes to the government contracting space.
And it gives you opportunity to network. So I agree, at least putting a face to, I guess you can actually see them virtually. People are watching us virtually right now as well. But I guess in a sense, it gives you the opportunity to really connect face to face. So, but with your company helping businesses from start to finish with the pre-bid, the bid, and the post-bid phase of contracting life cycles, what are some of the three key components in all three phases?
So they're all so different. So I think the best way probably would be, you know, what are some of the key elements that I think that you need to kind of have in place?
For each,
and maybe potentially, you know, some of the potential obstacles that you might have to overcome because they are different, right? So like in the pre-bid phase, that's, you know, there's a lot of activities that go on in the pre-bid phase. And so much of the attention probably is placed on the bidding process, right? There's, you always hear, and there's not a lack of industry experts out there who are always talking about, you know, this proposal or this solicitation and this contract. And so everybody's like, oh, you know, I got to win this. I want to bid it. But the, you know, I think the most important part is what do you do before that, right? What are the activities that you have in place? What are some of the processes that you have in place to make sure that you can't chase everything, right? I kind of equate government contracting to dating. You can't date everybody. And I've got a presentation out there, Tinder partnering, right? Like, you know, partnering in the Tinder age. You swipe left, you swipe right, because you can't partner with everyone. You can't date everyone that's out there. And so you really kind of have to, you know, fully understand who are you? What do you want to be when you grow up? What is it that you sell? Is the customer that you're speaking with buying what you're selling? You know, like that, this all seems incredibly simplified and elementary, but I would say that those are probably the hardest things for customers sometimes when I speak to them to clearly articulate to me is, you know, what are your core services? Because, you know, I'll get a company that says, well, we're in IT. IT is very big. What part of IT? And I was like, well, we do everything. And, you know, like I've been known to say, oh, that's a lot of BS, you know, because you can't do everything. But you may do maybe one or two things really well. And so I would say, stay true to yourself, stay true to what your core capabilities are and really grow and expand from that. So the pre-bid part is really good and having a really good process for being able to, you know, there's not a lack of opportunities to identify, but how do you discern and determine which ones you bid on, right? Because you can't bid on everything. Even big companies who have a vast number of resources, both from people, finances, and, you know, and even, you know, as far as like intel that's out there, they don't even bid everything that's out there. So having a really clear, you know, bid, no bid type of process is really kind of key, because those opportunities, as you identify them and you go through this process of determining what you want to bid and, you know, what is really aligned with your capabilities and where you performed before, is your pipeline, right? So your pipeline is the lifeblood of your company. It pretty much is a, you know, like a collection of opportunities that are at different stages of levels of maturity. Some opportunities might be like the immediate, which we like to call in the industry low-hanging fruit, right? Like, what are some of the low-hanging fruits? They're going to be easy to respond to. They're immediately in front of you. You can address them or bid them right away. And then what are some of the opportunities that are maybe a little bit further down the line? So you're kind of planning this, you know, longer timeline. And I think the one takeaway from the pre-bid process that a lot of people who are new to the government space don't quite understand, and even some that are kind of, you know, in the space a little bit now and are still kind of new to government contracting, is that the timeline in the government space from when you identify an opportunity to when you actually win a contract, if you're so lucky to win the contract, could take anywhere between 12 to 24 to 36 months. And so that's something that you really kind of have to balance. You know, you have to balance that portfolio out in your pipeline, and that you need low hanging fruit, you need immediate contracts to kind of keep the lights on, right? You got to pay yourself, you got to pay your bills, you got to pay your cell phone, right? The bills don't stop. You know, they won't take an IOU like, hey, you know, like the government hasn't awarded me this contract yet, because there's really no guarantees, right? So just in life, there is no guarantees on the government side. So being able to really understand that timeline, that, you know, it's a marathon, government contracting. It is not a sprint. And if, you know, the quicker you understand that and accept that, I think the more successful, you know, you'll be.
And I'm very happy that you outlined that pre-bid component so thoroughly. But I wanted to kind of ask a quick question in terms of, how do you usually determine if a opportunity is biddable or not? So that go, no-go stage, what are some key characteristics that you usually look for in an opportunity?
So I'm going to answer that with like a statement that one of my best friends says, I hate it when you answer this way, is it depends. It's like my, I'm going to make a t-shirt that says it depends, right? Because it really kind of does. And so there are a couple of factors. You know, those of you who are in the space probably have heard, you know, there's, you need like a bid, no bid checklist. And it really kind of is that, right? It's a checklist of key questions and key factors that you always kind of consider when you're pursuing an opportunity. They can kind of change depending upon the complexity or the timeline or, you know, how large an opportunity is. But there are key components that you should always kind of have at the helm and at the ready to kind of answer. And so some of the factors are customer and opportunity focused factors, right? Like, do you know the customer? Do you know the program? Do you understand, you know, maybe some of the key hot buttons or key factors as to, you know, why this program or why this contract is out for bid? The government doesn't buy for no reason whatsoever. You know, like, everyone thinks that the government has, you know, like an infinite amount of resources, but there's a lot of work and a lot of justification that, you know, each of the offices and agencies have to go through to justify why they're going to expend, you know, these funds. And so really understanding, why is the customer buying this? And then, you know, knowing that and knowing how to price it, you know, like, is the customer price sensitive? You know, do they not care about pricing? Is it funded? Is it not funded? A lot of those things, you know, really kind of come into play. There are some internal factors to you as a company, you as a business. You know, is the opportunity aligned with, you know, what you do? What are your core capabilities and where your past performances? You know, more so, I think, in the government space than probably on the commercial side, is that the government really cares about past performance. So past performance is indicative of future success and future performance. It's the government takes those references that you provide to them and measures a level of risk. And so the government is very risk averse. And so they're not going to take on or give you a contract if you are potentially the high risk option. They're going to go for the lowest risk. And we do this in our own personal lives too, right? Maybe not in a formalized manner. But, you know, those are some of the key things that you have to, you know, like consider is, you know, core competency or not, you know, do you have the skills? Do you have the capabilities? And a lot of times it's, you know, those answers are, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And so then it kind of, you know, well, why is it that I don't win then if I have all of these things in place? And it goes down to like the third factor, which is the market and competitive information that you have. So, you know, as you can imagine, there's so many facets to the government. There are hundreds of thousands of government contractors and small businesses and large businesses out there that compete for work all the time that you're competing against a very, very large group of people. So you have to now determine who are your competitors, right? This is something that I think any business and any entrepreneur, you know, does is that you need to know who you're competing against. How do you differentiate yourself against, you know, some of your competitors? You know, do you have a service or a product that maybe is in a new market for the government? You know, is that it, do you have an innovation? You know, government is always looking for innovative approaches, but that's kind of a double-edged sword too. So innovation, newness, and different equals high risk to the government. And so a lot of times the government is very slow to change. They're very slow to adopt things. But knowing which parts of the government, which agencies, which programs are open to innovation and, you know, some of the new technologies out there is really kind of key. And that will help you better align, you know, what it is that you're selling. And that will kind of go into factoring whether or not you bid an opportunity.
And one other component that you added into that is understanding pricing and can you price it? And of course, that made me want to piggyback and go into the conversation of, do you usually help businesses with pricing? And I feel like this is always a topic that comes up because people have a hard time pricing their products or their services, specifically as it relates to selling to government agencies. What are some, I guess, would you mind speaking to that pricing aspect, and what are some tips that you would give to a small business owner to help them understand a better way to price?
Yeah. So pricing sometimes could be like the $8 billion, you know, like question, right? Like some of these contracts are really, really large. And so I think from a pricing perspective, there's a couple of things because knowledge is power and it is anywhere in government space. And so the government is regulated by the federal acquisition regulations. So there's a FAR part, whatever, for everything that the government does and buys. And so in some regards, it's really like, it's kind of easy working in the government space because I know what my rules are, right? I know what my parameters are. And so if you're a rule follower and, you know, you're really good at, you know, doing that, then the government space is, you know, going to be great for you because it dictates what thou shalt and shall not and will not be able to do. And so there is FAR Part 31 and FAR Part 52 are two parts that I think your audience should really, you know, go in and understand from a pricing perspective, because Part 31 talks about the contract cost principles and procedures, and it kind of really lays out the different types of, you know, contracts that the government is allowed to issue and what they really mean. And so the government has a definition, like if you're new to the space, go read FAR Part 2. I do have to say, please don't print the FAR. There is not enough paper and toner in the world that would make you want to print those FAR parts out. But go to FAR Part 2. FAR Part 2 is definitions, words, and terms. And so there are terms that the government uses, and it, you know, there is no ambiguity between when the government says this, this is exactly what they mean. But in Part 31, they talk about cost procedures. And in 52, they talk about how contracts are procured, the different provisions and the different clauses. And so when you get a government contract, you're signing up for and agreeing to these clauses, unless, you know, you go back to the government in the proposal phase and say, I don't agree with this, or I don't understand, or does this really apply? And the contracting officer has the right to like remove or say, no, you know, this applies. And you just have to kind of fight it and accept it. But we do help customers with pricing proposals, and pricing proposals are very complicated. You know, it's complicated. It can be complicated even in your own personal business, right? Like, what's my hourly rate going to be for this person, right? What's the math behind, you know, calculating an hourly rate? But in government contracting, it's even 10 times more complicated, because while the government buys, and I work primarily in the services side, so, you know, they're buying services, they're acquiring people with a certain level of expertise to provide consulting and to do different things for them, is that the government will buy in three primary types of contracts. Time and materials, obviously, is one of the most common, right? You're going to charge this amount for this hour of work and whatever. You know, those requirements, obviously, in any pricing requirement, there's a certain level of performance risk and cost risk to the government contractor and to the government. And so the government will shift risk to the contractor, and then you're going to hold more of the risk in certain types of contracts. And you have to really be careful and understand what they really mean. I think one of the most common ones is firm fixed price. And so they'll say, you know, on a firm fixed price, we will do X number of, you know, activities and put on X number of people for this price. And so every month, normally, you will say, you know, every month, this is what you're going to, you know, expect to pay me, government, for these services. Now, that only works if you understand the scope, if you've done your cost buildup properly, because you still have to provide those services. Even though you said you may put 12 people or you budget 12 people, but you're going to need 20 people, government doesn't care how many people you put on it, doesn't care how much you have to expend. You said you're going to do it for this amount of money each month, and that's how you're going to do it, right? So the scope of work really has to be clear. And then the last one is more, these are for more complex type of contracts where you're building ships or you're building systems, or, you know, you're doing a little bit more complicated type of services. And those are cost reimbursable or cost type of contracts. And I'm not even remotely going to go there, because that's way too far into the weeds. But on the government side, pricing is really a lot more than saying, I'm going to do this for less number of hours, or I'm going to do this with a less experienced person, because sometimes the government will dictate, no, you will do this for, you know, with this level of person, these are the labor categories, these are the qualifications that you have to have. And so then it becomes a recruiting and sourcing nightmare for you, because now you got to find someone that fits that hourly rate, that fits that salary, after you're able to put, you know, G&A and overhead and all those other things, you know, on top of their rates to make sure that you're making a profit. Because if you're not making a profit, why are we in this business?
That's exactly the truth. I think I've heard so many stories about businesses getting into the space and doing work with the government, but not receiving profit on their first, second, or third contract, and actually end up spending more than they're getting from the contract. So yeah, that is a huge, huge lesson in pricing.
And it's all has to do with the price buildup, right? So there's a lot behind the buildup of your price and into your cost. So the cost of what it takes to do the work is going to be maybe slightly different than the price that you bid. And knowing what your multipliers are and knowing how to build those up is really kind of important. So new companies in the business will either underbid, and so they haven't built up enough and they haven't, you know, like done their cost buildups properly, or they've cost and built in too much. And so now they're too expensive. And so finding that right medium, you really do need to have someone who's really experienced doing that, or at least come in and do it for you, if not kind of teach you how to do that or sanity check that. Because the price to win and the price to perform are two very different things.
Yeah, we definitely want to schedule a course about pricing. So yeah. We'll be reaching out again.
And here's the last thing on that is, do not bid a government contract and lowball it and low bid it just to expect that you might be able to price adjust or to win more work. Because I can see it all the time. I've walked away from bids and I'm like, yeah, good luck with that one, because there's no way you're gonna be able to perform at that bid, but now you've got that contract. So, you know, you gotta perform the contract.
You got to
get the contract.
Definitely that one. And I think with the fixed burn prices, you hit that one on the head. Usually people ask, what does that mean? But it's basically exactly what she said. So I'm excited that we got through that. And again, we'll be reaching back to do like literally just a segment on pricing in general.
That and bidding, like what do you bid, how do you bid, you know, like those are like multi-day type of discussions.
Yes, I know the one that you have coming up on Wednesday is I think it's how to determine when to bid, or
my Wednesday one that's coming up with WIP in San Diego is actually a third part of a presentation. Mm-hmm. So I did one in San Antonio a couple of months ago. And then I did a webinar last month with WIP. And each time I do it, I hate presenting the same thing over and over. I'm not one of those people. You know, it's like when you come on to one of my like, you know, presentations, it's always going to be something different because I like to keep it relevant, germane, and just kind of, you know, like what are some of the, you know, like current type of challenges that, you know, we're facing or we've been talking about. But for San Diego, I'm not quite sure yet, like what my spin's going to be, because the first one was very technical. It was very much about the process and the review gates and different things like that, because I'm a process person. I'm a PMP, so I break everything down to a process. And then the second one was more nuanced. It was more of a it depends type of conversation. So we talked a lot of the factors on bidding. This one, I don't know. Like, I don't know what I'm going to like factor that on. Maybe I'll just take one part and talk about maybe teaming. Right. Mm. So, you know, teaming has to another be one. Like a consideration when you decide whether or not you bid. Do you prime or do you sub, you know, on a contract? Because those two, that decision, you know, will take you in two very different approaches.
Absolutely. One final question. I know we do have a little time. So some more recommendations that you have for small businesses in terms of outreach effort, how they're going out, meeting different agencies and learning more about, you know, their potential clients, but also their potential partners, because you did mention teaming. Mm,
yes. Well, teaming is my favorite part. It's really kind of funny because a lot of my friends and colleagues are like, oh my God, Tan, where are you like this week? Like where, like you're like everywhere. I'm like, I'm really not, you know, it's like, it just seems like I am, but I'm very selective about where I go and what I do anymore. Just because I've kind of learned, but until you kind of, you know, figure out which ones are, you know, good and bad, you really kind of don't know. There are certain industry events that happen every year, like Clockwork, that I will go to. And if you follow my LinkedIn page, you'll know exactly where I'm going to be or what's coming up, you know, like in the industry itself. The best thing to do as far as like outreach or knowing, you know, and getting in front of the customer is that every agency has a small business office. And the small business liaisons tend to have small business outreaches. For example, HUD, I love their small business office. HUD was actually the first contract that I managed. So I'm a little kind of partial to them. But they have one every year, several that are focused towards different set asides. And so they'll have an event that are specifically tailored for like veteran-owned businesses. They have a women-owned business one every year. They will have a HUB zone one. Other agencies like Department of Energy, they will have one big small business event. And what's really great about the agency events that are put out is that a lot of times they will bring every agency, every office, every component to that event. So you don't have to fly to Atlanta to go see the CDC or, you know, go here to Baltimore to, you know, see CMS. You know, it's like with me, like I love the one-stop shop, right? It's kind of like going to the mall of government contracting. Everything's kind of there. And so there are, you know, different associations that will do the same thing besides, you know, the SBA. One of the other ones is if you are technical, you know, like I know some of your, you know, the viewers here might be very technically focused, whether it's in the IT, in the DoD space. Maybe they have like some technologies or, you know, like innovations or products out there. There are certain agencies out there, associations, I apologize. ACT IACT is one of the associations that is for industry. And ACT-IACT is really kind of interesting in that they have two parts. They have a industry board and they have a government board. And so it's an association that's actually run in collaboration of both sides. And so I think, you know, that association is really great in that you've got both sides coming together and really making sure that, you know, the government hears what industry has to say. Industry can kind of tell the government how they feel and what is important to them. And then industry can also hear from the government too, what's important to them. So it's a very good mutual collaboration. And then we have other agent, you know, associations like the one that I sit on the board of directors for is AFSEA. AFSEA is primarily military, DOD, and academic focused. And so a lot of our work transcends, you know, IT, cyber, you know, Intel, and technologies. And so we are focused on the DOD side. And so we will have different events called TechNets that are done throughout the year out as far, and we're an international organization too. So there's international organizations out, you know, like in Europe, as well as in Asia. We have one, a conference in Hawaii every year. It's called TechNet Indo-Pac. And so it gets, you know, like everybody together. West is coming out in February. I will be there at that. That's very Navy focused and that's out in San Diego. We just finished Alamo Ace, which was here in San Antonio, and that was very Air Force cyber focused. And so you can kind of see where I'm going, right? So there's certain associations that partner up with different parts and different branches of the government to collaboratively, you know, bring really great programming and information to industry so that you don't have to kind of go everywhere and be everywhere to kind of get this information.
Okay, I like that. Just definitely pointing out those, attend the events. That was the first thing she said. How do you learn more about the industry? Attend the events. And then one of the greatest lessons that you've learned in this space. And also while she's answering that question, if you have any questions, please be sure to go ahead and drop them in the comment section. Also, don't forget to like this video to help us grow our page. So go ahead and make sure you drop those questions in the comments and listen up for this greatest lesson that Tan has learned.
I think I have three. Okay. And I'm not always rosy. So, you know, it's like, I always try to tell the unfiltered, you know, like very unfiltered truth about things because, you know, government contracting is hard.
And we need that because people are really glamorizing it now.
Some of my industry colleagues can make a lot of money off of glamorizing it. And so not that I'm not a positive kind of person because, you know, I'm just a pragmatist when it comes to that. I've had a lot of success with business and our customers learn too, but you do need to have someone who kind of tells you the truth sometimes, right? You know, like we all need that in our lives. It's just, so I guess the first thing is that no one knows everything. And so I'm always wary about someone who comes in and starts to really kind of brag about how great they are and how much they know and, you know, like, and stuff like that. Like, I bristle when someone says that I'm an expert or it's me because I'm like, no, because there's so many other people who are 10 times smarter than me and know so much more. But yeah, no one knows everything. So it's okay to ask the questions because I still ask these questions because I'm like, I will be the one person who said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Can you like clarify that for me? So be the brave person in the room that says, I don't understand what you say and really listen to how they explain that. Okay. Because you can tell a lot about how someone explains something as to whether or not they understand and truly comprehend what they're saying, or are they just reading it off of a PowerPoint or giving you very high pie in the sky kind of, well, if you do this or you should do this. And it's like, okay, well, that's great, but where have you done that lately? Is usually my comeback for that. I guess the second one is that people and companies look better on paper and in social media than in real life. And so I think that, you know, while social media has been great, it's really now tough to kind of weed through those who have the chops, those who have credibility, or those who have an incredibly beautiful PR marketing company. behind them, right? And so the government is starting to kind of see through that too. And so the government is starting to issue a lot more contracts and procurements where it is quals based. I don't care how beautiful your graphics are. I don't care how beautiful your prose is and whether or not you can write in English or, you know, like, and present the, you know, the proposal, but do you really have the chops and have you, you know, really done this before? And can I really truly evaluate you against what you've done? So you have to be able to kind of like walk the walk, you know, instead of kind of like faking it until you make it kind of thing. And then the third one, which is against, I'm going to say this, and I know a lot of my colleagues are going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe you just said this, is the get rich quick schemes and guarantees of contract promise.
You hit that one on the head right there. Just
right? I get asked that a lot. Like I, you know, when someone calls me and be like, you know, they get really pushy with me. It's like, well, what's your win rate? Or, you know, like how much work have you won? I'm like, I kind of track it and I have metrics and I, you know, in my presentations, I think I've won like several hundred billion dollars of work. And that's actual work, not just contract value. Cause I think contract value, I think I've won over $6 trillion of work, but just because I've won those contracts doesn't mean that the government has awarded that much work. So, you know, those are two very different things, but you know, there's so many people out there and there's so much noise online about how if you do this or if you follow my approach, you're going to get this contract or you just need to do this. And it was just like, well, it kind of depends, right? It depends on a lot of different things. There's no guarantees in that. And I'm never going to guarantee that you're going to win this contract. Or if you speak to this person, and that's the other thing too. It's like, oh, well, I can get you in front of, you know, like, you know, Lieutenant Colonel so-and-so, or, you know, you hire someone who just retired from the government and I'm going to get you in front of, you know, like some CIO or whatever. I'm like, that's great. They set policy. They don't determine what programs are executed. So, you know, or I can get you in front of this contracting officer. That's great too. But they only, you know, they only put out and solicit and award the contract. They don't determine what's in the scopes of work or what programs get there. So you need to talk to the programming people. You really need to talk to the government people who are doing the work, the boots on the ground, the programming people, the people who really have a say, you know, in a lot of these government programs. So yeah, those are the three things that kind of like, you know, chapped me a little bit.
I had to write those down because as soon as you said them, I kept having different thoughts about it. So that first one, I'm just going to go through what you said again. That first one, you said no one knows everything. That is such a powerful statement because usually you have so many people or you'll have people in the space who will say that they are experts in a space, but information is constantly evolving. Instructions are constantly coming out. Opportunities are always available. And it just seems as, and people are constantly rotating and shifting in this space. So opportunities are going to become available, but there's no way one person is going to tell you everything. Like for example, I'm not going to ever tell anyone, hey, come to me for everything government contracting when I don't deal with multiple award schedules, like at all. So for me to say something like that, so just move on to the next one.
It's all for you, right?
Yeah. Social media and PR companies, being able to put that information out is a huge opportunity and advantage for people just to really help people understand about government contracting and the opportunities that are in the space, but also being able to remove some of the noise can become, you know, very frustrating at times.
Yeah, because you know, we have colleagues that like reshare too. Like resharing, I think, is the bane of my existence sometimes. So like, and I'm very selective sometimes as to how I reshare. I will take content that I've read or whatever and kind of put my spin on it, right? Like, so a lot of, you know, a lot of my colleagues will push out very similar information, but we always kind of approach that same information from a very different set of lenses, right? From, because we're all looking at it from our perspective and how we're involved in it. And so I think that's really kind of important, you know, for this generation and, you know, like the next group of, you know, entrepreneurs is that mimicking, I think, will only get you so far. you really do have to have original thoughts, original capabilities that are yours, right? And so, you know, trying to be like someone else is only going to get you so far, because people are going to start to kind of see through that. And so not saying that it doesn't have its, you know, purpose and its time and, you know, like its advantages sometimes, but you can definitely tell, you know, people who, you know, are just kind of there for the wrong reasons or are very shallow in their, you know, level of abilities.
Very. And the last one, the final one that you mentioned was the get rich quick schemes. Government contracting takes time. I've said this over and over and over. And I never say I don't want to beat a dead horse when it comes down to that topic, because it's going to take time. Like, you have to build relationships, understand the process, learn. Number one, you have to learn everything in this space. So
be open to learning too. Yes. Right? Like I think, you know, the hardest executives to work with are those who feel like they have nothing to learn, or, you know, that you have nothing to impart on them. And that's, I think that's just a character flaw. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's like in any industry, but especially in this one, it is ever evolving. It is always different. The government's always going to come up and find a way to, I'm going to keep it PG-13. To kind of screw you over a little bit, right? Or to make something different, because every time a new administration comes in, every time a new director, a new secretary of a department comes in, they want to put their spin on it. They want to do things different. So like the government is ever evolving as far as like their needs. And so really understanding your space and understanding whether or not, like, do you want to be a partner in this? Can you help like move the government, you know, like in the right direction, or at least guide them, or, you know, like direct them to your approach to it, I think is where a lot of the successful, you know, companies, you know, are doing, and that they're out there influencing the government instead of just kind of chasing and responding. So, you know, like there's a lot of reaction that happens in the government space, especially from these, you know, get rich quick schemes. Like, and I'm always amazed by people who try to telemarket me. And I was like, hey, did you know that you can get a GSA schedule, and that you could sell to the government, and that, you know, like based on what you know, based on your company, you can get this. And I'm like, did you really do research on my company? Do you really know what it is that I do? Because no. And there are people who will take money from you to, like, you know, like charge you money to do things that you can do for free, and that is, does not cost money to do. So I feel really badly sometimes for new and small businesses, because, you know, I feel like they're being taken advantage of all the time.
Yeah, it can be very predatory, I will definitely say.
It is.
And we have someone in the comments, Heather, she says that companies who don't execute what they're committed to when they're signing the government contracts or agreeing on government contracts can face dire consequences. And that's one thing that we also don't talk enough about. Usually, you know, but you have to pay this money back if you don't go and, you know, get the contract and stuff, and you can be sued and you can be debarred from doing business with the government. I'm sorry, I'm getting into this. I'm going to stop. Tan, I'm going to let you take it.
No. Like it's serious, right? You know, it's like, I think when new companies to industry look at, you know, like these dollar signs, and they hear about the, you know, the big contracts that GDIT is winning, or, you know, like, and the government is out there, like, yes, those are very real. We've won, like, I personally have won a lot of those really big ones, and they're like no joke. With the terms and the clauses in there. And so a lot of times when a solicitation comes out, and it's like this on a state and local level too. Like I do state and local biz. I don't like to, but there's a lot of companies that will do really well. And if you're new to business in this industry, that's a great place to start, right? So because the contracts are smaller sometimes, the contracts are a little less complicated. And in dealing with a state and local entity, while there's still that huge level of bureaucracy, it is a little bit safer. It's a lot lower risk sometimes for performing. When you're dealing with like federal contracts, there are a slew of clauses that could be in there. And they tend to be like the middle part of the solicitation that no one likes to read. So everyone reads the front cover and then they skip to the back to find out how to respond to it. And then they pull out the part, you know, section C that says like, here's the scope of work and what you need to do. And then they ignore like all the sections from like D through J or D through K. And I'm just like, that's a lot. There's a lot that's kind of packed in there. And by you submitting that bid, you have agreed to everything that's in there. So shouldn't you read it first? But yeah, there are a lot of consequences. And no, the government will not pay you back any extra expenses that it caused, you know, that you caused the government to kind of fix what it is that you did wrong. So absolutely, kind of a catch, right? Government work is really great and that they're great payers. They're timely payers for the most part, you know, and a lot of times when they don't pay in a timely manner, it's because the government contractor didn't follow the invoicing procedures. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's great and everything. It's very consistent. It's consistent work. It can be very lucrative work. But at the same time, there's a lot of front end investments that you have to make too, that are more than just financial investments. It's time investments, right? You know, it's your own personal time. It's time of your staff and stuff like that, just to become educated, you know, in how to do this and how to bid and be successful.
Absolutely. Tan, how would businesses be able to reach out to you or learn more from you and connect with you? Where would you recommend business owners to go?
So I am all over LinkedIn. I actually do have like, that's really the best way is to connect with me on LinkedIn. And I will say this for like, so Heather LaCroix is a close colleague. I know she's on this call here and other colleagues too, but, and everyone's heard me say this before, is if you connect with me on LinkedIn and you want to like connect with me, don't send me a canned LinkedIn request. Make sure you write me a note. Why is it that you're connecting with me? What it is, who are you? Where did you meet me? Because I do not connect with everyone. I'm a little bit of a LinkedIn connection snob, because I'm like, no thanks. Or, you know, like, but you can follow me all you want, you know, if you don't want to connect with me, that's fine too. But between my company's page, Intellect LLC, and myself, on LinkedIn, you'll know exactly what's going on. I try to talk about relevant and upcoming, you know, like, opportunities, different things that are happening in the government that maybe small businesses, you know, like need to know. I'm the emeritus chair for the Small Business Committee at FCIA. And so it's been my passion to advocate for small businesses. And so, you know, I kind of continue to do that now, you know, and have always done that through my business. And so LinkedIn is really kind of the best way to kind of follow and know what's going on and then connect with me. So.
Got it. And someone asked one final question. I promise you, I said that was the last one. I dropped the links to connect with Tan on LinkedIn and also the link to her website. They're both on the YouTube channel in the comment section or in the chat, in the YouTube chat. So you can go ahead and check those out. Her bio is also in the description box below. And the final question from our audience is there an etiquette when reaching out for bids?
What do you mean when reaching out for bid? Like, is that, well, so on the government's, for government contracting, most bids are issued through SAM.gov. And so, you know, there are FAR regulations that dictate how and where certain opportunities are posted or publicized. So SAM.gov has majority of them. It doesn't have all of them because if you have a MAS schedule or if you have a GWAC or a BIC, they will be, you know, those opportunities will be released through their specific, you know, contracting portals through eBuy or through, you know, NITAC's website for SP3 and so forth. So everything's kind of publicized and published. So the etiquette would be, you know, if you have any comments or questions, there's always deadlines that are stipulated in each opportunity as to when they will accept it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of follow this rule, is that even though there might be a deadline, you should always try to meet that deadline and send them. But if I feel that there's still anything ambiguous, even after that deadline, I will still send it in. And the reason being is that sometimes if you ask a follow-on question to answers that have already been submitted or you've missed that deadline, it may impact how the solicitation is procured. And it will also trigger potentially pre-award protest timeline too. So, you know, the protesting, you know, regs out there are very clear sometimes in a very muddy kind of way when the protesting clock starts. It's all being handled through the contracting officer. And so that's the way that you would go. Once a contract or once a solicitation, is out on the street and has been released and is publicized, programming people should not and cannot speak to you any further about those programs. And so there are certain unwritten types of etiquette for who you can and cannot speak to, depending upon the phase and the stage of where that opportunity is in that procurement timeline.
Got it.
So it depends.
That was a perfect final response to a question. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing this information with us. It's been awesome. And we will definitely be reaching back to kind of get you in on some other courses or something that we may have coming up, because this was very helpful for the audience.
Let's talk about teaming next time, because, you know, teaming, dating, it's like, I love talking about people. So that will be fun. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. So Hannah's on the call. Hannah, you got that? Teaming. That's our next episode. Not upcoming, but in the following season. So, but thank you, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. This has been an amazing episode. So happy to have, you know, all of you on sharing with you. And don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to our podcast on YouTube. We are posting, or we're having live sessions every Thursday at 1:30 p.m. to share more information about government contracting, how to get into the space. We have government agencies who are coming in. We're interviewing government professionals, as well as business owners and consultants in this space who've been doing the work. So again, don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and we'll see you all in the next episode. All right. Peace.